Oladipo into the corner where the open Bogdanovich gives Indiana its largest lead of the night with a three.
Hello and welcome into another Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan, joined by, as always, Jeremiah Johnson. We are now 14 games into the season, so with each one of these, I feel like we get a little bit more concrete of information. We're not dealing with quite as small of sample sizes. The Pacers, they're coming off a tough week, a loss to Houston, I guess if you count that into last week, at least last week as the podcast as it relates to that. A good win against Chicago. It was good to see them take care of business on the road against a worse team. A couple of losses before that, they've fallen to 6-8 on the season. That Houston game, the one we just saw, they're such an outlier team, I think, in general, and they're fascinating to watch. No one plays like them. They chuck up threes. Who knows? You know, the question on how that works long term for Houston and in the playoffs, I think, is a different question. But one thing I tried to gather a lot in the locker room, and players don't typically like talking a lot about other teams right after the game, and I get that, is just the oddity of trying to defend a team like that when you don't normally see it. And I think that came into play a little bit on Sunday.
Yeah. It was one of those games that I thought schedule-wise maybe could be advantage Pacers, and I referenced on a few different outlets about that it was one of the first times, and I think the first time officially the Pacers were the fresh team where they had time off and the opponents played the night before. And if you looked at Houston, they had, you know, a high-intensity, high-profile game at Cleveland on Thursday. Then they came home and on Saturday night played the Memphis Grizzlies, which is, you know, a pretty good rivalry, a good Western Conference opponent. And then 22 hours later, tipped off against the Pacers, against a team that, you know, human nature would say you might let up a little bit. And the Pacers saw that last year against the Rockets on the fifth game of a five-game road trip, and they got them at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And then they fell behind early in a game at Houston and came back and won. So I thought it was something that Houston could do. They could let up, and that could be just the opening that Indiana would need to, you know, play their maximum effort type game, feed off the home crowd like we've seen them be able to do over the years, and maybe get the win. My takeaway leaving Bankers Life Fieldhouse is, wow, Houston is really good, and I'll wait for another month to really analyze the Warriors, and obviously they are the top team. But I'm going to say that I'm going to be having a hard time to be convinced that somebody else is better than the second best team in the NBA based on what I saw. And I think part of that is just, you know, under the radar acquisitions. When you bring on a guy like PJ Tucker, he does a lot to your team. And you already had Trevor Ariza, where you maybe thought of him as a three-point shooter, but he's so long and he is a good defender as well. And Quinn said it probably four or five times during the broadcast that now this team defends, and before they just tried to outscore you. And you have to be able to stop Golden State if you're going to beat them. Now, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens when Chris Paul comes back. I think his presence is a good motivation for James Harden. I think he keeps him in line even if he's not playing. I'm just curious to see what the style will be on the floor. So my takeaway was Houston is really, really good. I think when this season started, even the most optimistic of Pacers fans would say there are going to be some matchups that aren't good for this team. They may not win the game, but it won't be due to a lack of effort. They just might not be good enough on that night, and that was the case. Overall, in the last week, it wasn't a great week for the blue and gold. I mean, you think back to after that win at Cleveland, this team was 5-3, and now you're 6-8, and you've had a couple of games that you'd like to have back, specifically, you know, the Knicks and the Pelicans stand out as the two games, even throw Philadelphia in there. But if you beat Philadelphia, maybe you're not ahead against the Knicks. You'd like to have one, definitely maybe two more wins than you have right now, and I think that the schedule is going to be really tough moving forward in the next couple of weeks.
I don't want to focus too much on Houston because we are not a Rockets podcast, but
I kind of talked a long time about Houston.
You're good, because I wanted to throw this back at you. Has there ever been a team in the NBA, I'm sure there has, but they're so unique, because has there ever been a team in the NBA who potentially has a, you could argue, top 10 player in the league coming back soon? And I don't know if they're uneasy about it, but I think I would be uneasy about it, because in their last six games, they have dominated. They're 6-0 in their last six, and they're winning by an average of almost 20 points per game in those. And Chris Paul, who is, you know, after Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook, you could maybe say the best point guard in the NBA, he's going to come back, and it's just hard to imagine, which is crazy to say, he's so good, but it's hard to imagine exactly how his style, which is walk the ball up the floor and pound and dribble and use late in the shot clock, is going to fit with this team who's chucking up threes with 21 seconds left on the shot clock.
I tend to think he's the kind kind of player that can adapt to his surroundings. You know, we often hear coaches adapt to their players, and they play the style based on the players that they have. I think he's pretty understanding of what that team has going right now, and he's been around long enough and wants to win a championship that he's not going to come in and try to shake things up. What I think is a little bit scary is if he does maybe come off the bench for a while. And, Eric Gordon would probably gladly go to the bench and take that role and let Chris Paul start. But if that starting unit has got things clicking like they do, maybe you bring Chris Paul off the bench. And then he's challenged, though, to push the tempo more than he's used to. I think he will probably try to go much faster and not walk the ball up and down the floor because he doesn't want to be the reason that team is not successful. But it is must-see TV and League Pass alert viewing possibilities.
We have a lot of Twitter questions, and we're going to get to them intermittently throughout this show. One I wanted to get to real quick, it actually came in since we have been taping, and it was a subject you and I talked about hitting on, from Javon. What can the Pacers do to get Miles more touches? And this is an interesting conversation as it relates to Miles, because as he came back, he was concussion symptom free, but he hadn't been physically able to do the training that the rest of the team was doing for almost 2 weeks. And he said, when I asked him, how long does it take for a guy to get out of NBA shape? And he said 2 days, which just shows you how good a shape those guys are in. So he missed 13. So him coming back was a little bit of a process. And I think now he's getting close to, if not back to NBA shape. But a good example was that game against Houston, because he didn't have a huge stat stuffing night. He had a good rebounding night, but he really didn't shoot the ball all that much either, and he shot over 50% on the night. So it bared a question, I think. Did he get enough touches, and should he have taken more shots? And with Miles coming back from this injury, kind of working his way into a lineup that had sort of started to gain some chemistry while he was gone, I think.
I think you have to take a look at Miles Turner and not think about what you saw in the last 2 weeks, and maybe start from scratch right now and say, what do you have in the next 2 weeks? You talked with Miles before the Rockets game, and you asked him if he was 100% back to full conditioning. You know he is fully healthy, but back to where he wanted to be, and he said it's still a little bit of a work in progress. So I think part of that may be getting his win, but also it may be regaining the chemistry that he had, that he then lost for those 2 weeks, 3 weeks that he was out of the lineup, and just being comfortable with his teammates. And I think he's one of these players, much like so many, that relies on confidence. When he's confident about what he is doing, there's no hesitation. He pops from 15 feet, knocks that shot down. Everyone wants to see Miles Turner a little more active on the post. We are seeing, though, more times with Domas Sabonis on the floor with Miles Turner. And if Domas is on the floor, I think whether they're called the four or the five or reversed, Miles is kind of more of a four type of player, and Domas is more of a five. So I think you're going to have more action starting out of the post with Domas and Miles outside. He just has to confidently knock that shot down and then do what we saw in that Nets game where he pump faked and then drove to the basket and slammed it home. That's what I want to see from Miles a little bit more, and I want to project over the next 2 weeks, and I really think you're going to see Miles take a big step forward. There were times last season where, I wanted to see more out of Miles, and just when I thought, maybe he's not having a real good year, he'd have a good couple of weeks. So I do think that over the next 2 weeks, you've had some of the really difficult matchups in the rearview mirror now, and not to say that some of the matchups coming up aren't going to be difficult, but I want to see Miles over the next 2 weeks fully 100% healthy, out of foul trouble, and see what happens. But I think that Nate McMillan has to get him the ball more, but this is such a, in its best, in its optimum form, this offense is such a free-flowing, move the ball around a little bit, that Miles doesn't want to be the stopper either. He wants to get it and then pass it too. And the idea would be to get him, obviously, the ball where he's open and he can finish a little bit more. And so I understand the comments from Twitter, and I see the same thing. But let's give it a little bit more of a sample size.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what you were touching on a moment ago when he caught that ball in game number one and at the top of the key and took it in and dunked it, I think that's a little bit more of the intensity I think a lot of us would like to see from him, the mindset maybe that we'd like to see from him. But he's such a good jump shooter, and he can be such a weapon away from the basket. I think for him it's just kind of finding that sweet spot of where he should be on the floor and how much he should dedicate to each of those different positions. The Pacers are fortunate. I went back and was watching just randomly some highlights of some of those 2010 teams and the teams that went to the Eastern Conference Finals and were obviously very good. And it's amazing to think now, when you watched Roy Hibbert, who was very good on those teams, it's amazing now to think that you've got a center that can shoot the three-pointer, and you're pretty confident with him being able to do that or step out and shoot to 20, 25 feet. And that is a weapon, and that's just, I think, the balance that he's got to find is, you know, he's a really good shooter, and he hit his growth spurt late. So a lot of his, you know, growing up, he was a guard. So you don't want to take that natural ability that he has away from him. But at the same point, you know, you don't see a lot of guys go back to the basket that often anymore. But at the same point, I think you would like to see him in the post just a little bit more.
We have a lot of Twitter questions. I just looked. This might be a
more
record.
Than I realized.
So
yeah.
I don't know if it was our appearance on the Corner 3 podcast that has fans flocking to the Twitter account right now. But a lot of questions. I think it'd be impossible to get to all of them. But I think it's silly not to address some of them maybe in a little bit more of a rapid fire method and just go through this if you're all right with that.
Yeah, half of them I think are on the same subject. We'll hit on one, but
okay. All right, so well, let's go to the next one I see, and I think this is kind of important. I've seen a couple about Thaddeus Young, and some people are referencing so this is at Pacer Nation. It's time to move Thad Young. If he's moved, what can we get in return? Jeremy Sizemore says, as much as I like Thad Young, is it time to move him for some young pieces or draft picks? Let's step back for a minute. I mean, I understand sometimes maybe we can be a little too on the optimistic side, but Thad has had one bad game in 14, and that's the one that's fresh in your memory. And I think what a lot of this comes from is the idea, and I even said it during the broadcast on Sunday about the minutes that we've seen Miles Turner and Sabonis play together on the floor. And I think it's such a fascinating combination, and you can project to the future and see what those two can do. But I try to think of it in terms of a three big men for two spots situation, and not to take anything away from TJ Leaf, but I think he's about a 10-minute a game guy right now in this league, in his rookie season. So to me, you've got Thad, you've got Miles, and you've got Domas, and in a perfect world, you can kind of mix those three within those two spots. And Thad has been phenomenal on defense, and there are so many people. Think of how many games in the first 14 that if you didn't have Thad, who's guarding some of these guys? I mean, right now the option at times with the three is Boyan, and you know, there's that memorable play where he stole the ball from LeBron, and then, you know, the next thing I see, he's guarding James Harden. And that's kind of the role that Thad can serve, is he can guard so many people. So I just think Thad has the kind of game that he's going to be productive for a while. And I don't know the contract situations and where he wants to be and what the market would be for him, but I would caution everyone to slow down a little bit on this, you know, wanting to push that out, because these are just a couple people, and I don't even want to make a big deal about it, because I don't think it's anything that's close to happening. I'll say that first. The Kevin Pritchard and the front office, they'll do whatever is best for the franchise, you know, both short term and long term. But let's appreciate what Thad does, and how frustrated was he? He didn't have a good game on Sunday. You saw that with the jersey rip. But I expect him to probably be the most productive Pacer Wednesday night in Memphis, and I can think of very few people I'd rather have right now than Thad Young.
I made the comment to Eddie White on our Blue and Gold Breakdown web show last week. I said, you know what, we've spent so much time about talking about Miles Turner, now this is his team, or he's one of the couple guys who are the leaders now, and everything that he could bring at 21 years old. And of course, Domantas Sabonis, I think, has taken the early part of the season by storm. I said, we aren't giving enough love to Thaddeus Young. And part of that is because he's a known commodity. He's consistent every game. He's not somebody who's going to go out and put up 30 and 12, but he is somebody who almost every single night you look at his box score and it's something like 16-8. And he gives the Pacers versatility on the defensive side. When the Rockets come out, you've got a power forward who can guard around the perimeter, and you feel, you know, comfortable with that. If Thad gets switched on to James Harden, as you said, he's not the ideal guy to guard James Harden, but he can hold his own there. And I think part of this, I don't think fans are meaning to dismiss Thad too much. It's just Sabonis has come out and he's played so well. And early in that third, the Pacers went on a nice run, and it was Sabonis who was doing a lot of that pushing for Indiana on Sunday night. And I think I go back to what you said a second ago, and I think it's on, which is, what if you just considered it right now this way? They've got three guys, and two can play on the floor at once. But if you've got two of those three on the floor for the entire game, they're each going to play 30 minutes or so. And does it really matter who gets introduced by Jerry Baker with, you know, the lights out and the fireworks going off? Mark Monteith is famous for saying it's not who starts, it's who closes games. So I think I totally understand where this is coming from, because Sabonis has played so well. It's something I think all of us have wondered, that we haven't seen a ton of time on the floor with Sabonis and Miles on the floor together. But I do think that that it has led to Thad being undersold a little bit here. I think he's been so vital in where there's been a little bit of an injury-filled beginning of the season. His consistency has been so big. And I think I would, you know, challenge Pacers fans to kind of try to view things outside of the normal realm, which is who are the five starters, who are coming off the bench. If it's three guys and there's two spots for them and you always have two of those guys on the floor at once, then the starter doesn't really matter. Look at the minutes at the end of the game. Sabonis is playing in the upper 20s. I think they're comfortable with him playing into the 30s. And, you know, let's enjoy the fact that you've got three guys who you want to start too. And to quickly touch, somebody else asked about – I'm going through it here. I can't find it at the moment – about could you start all three of them, Thad at the three – and that's been asked. I actually wondered the same thing. Ben Cox,
I woke up to a tweet from @PacersWin, and by the time I actually got to the bottom of it, after all the blue and gold hearts, it was a yes or no question. But it's, I had to click on it, of course, and then see the picture, and it has a new starting lineup, which has a picture including Domas and Lance alongside Victor, Miles, and Thad. I mean, yeah, I could see that at some point, but you know, Lance is the best energy guy off the bench. I wouldn't move him from that spot. And I think there are certain times you could have Thad, Domas, and Miles on the floor at the same time.
Nate has expressed less than an eager attitude about having Thad play the three. I think we've asked him about that before, and I think, you know, he's tried it, but he feels like Thaddeus Young is really the at his best at the four. And we've even seen the Pacers at time, and I think some of this is more necessitated by the fact that they didn't have Miles Turner and they were a little thin. We've seen him play Thad at the five. I think that in this day and age of the NBA, which is crazy to say because he probably came into the league as a three, but in today's day and age of the NBA, I think that is closer to a five than he is a three. And he can hit the three-pointer, of course, and he's fairly athletic, but Nate has had some reservations about playing him at the three. So I have wondered this too. You know, you've got three guys. Well, maybe you could just play all of them.
And you're never going to be completely healthy. I mean, you are not. True. You are now, but what if you, you know, remove one of them or take them away, and then somebody else gets a hamstring injury or a calf strain?
Which we have for most of the year. I mean,
exactly.
Think about how many games Thad's been healthy the whole time, but think about how many games just Miles and Domas have both.
And you also have to have the bench succeed. I mean, think about Domas can come in and just terrorize backups. Well, that's an important part of the game as well, and then you could play him some more in the second half. So I don't think that a starting lineup change is imminent. But I also think that we saw last year, when things were just so up and down, Nate was willing to change. So I think that people, you know, it is the nature of fandom right now and, you know, social media. You can, you know, I want to make a change. I think it could happen at some point, but let's see what happens this week. I don't think it's imminent right now. Another question from Jake Sapper at Sapperisms. Does Victor Oladipo have a chance to make the East All-Star team if he keeps scoring at his current rate? References 23.4 points per game. That's currently 12th in the NBA and shooting 48% from the field. My take would be, I think Victor is in position right now to be an Eastern Conference All-Star. It would be a solid yes if the Pacers were a top eight team in mid-January in the Eastern Conference. I think you're going to still have a number of Cavs, and then you've got some stars, really. The East is looking a lot better than I think anyone gave it credit for, and it is still early, and it'll probably come down a little bit. But there are a lot more quality teams in the East, and so for every quality top eight team, you would say, well, then there's someone that deserves to be on the All-Star team. So Victor keeps it up, which isn't a given. I mean, it's going to be hard to keep up the pace that he is at, but if he can stay about where he is and the Pacers win just a little bit more and be in that top eight mix, I'd say, yeah, All-Star for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. I think if we were right now, he would be in the All-Star game. I think it's, you know, he's got to show that he can do this for longer than 14 games, but I've been impressed because he came out of the gates so hot, and we said, okay, well, let's see if he comes down to earth. And he had a couple of games where he struggled on the road and then kind of has come back to this 25 points a game you seemingly see from him every night. And also, I don't have his stats in front of me right now, but it feels like most of these nights he's scoring in the 20s. He's not going like 7 for 21. Like he's 11 for 20 or something along those lines, and he's shooting it pretty well, and he's been effective. So I absolutely think he could be. And, you know, We have so many questions here. I can't find the ones that
we're talking a little too long about each one to go rapid fire. But
somebody asked on that line, which is something that we talked about on Sunday night on the corner three. Here it is, Luke Calvert asking, "What's been more surprising, Sabonis or Victor?" And this is a topic that I think that exact question was asked previously. And I talked a little bit about how I thought Domantas was going to come in here and you know, play like this. And so I haven't been so much surprised by him because I thought he had this in him. So for me, that answer is Victor, because we've seen Oladipo for, you know, 4 years or whatever now, and kind of seen his game and what he is, which is a really good NBA player. And I think it was important to caution people too, like, he's 25, he's not 28, so his game is not fully developed. And I think that was a little bit unfair when that trade came over. But I've been really surprised that Oladipo has been able to jump his game up to this level, I think, consistently, obviously very pleasantly surprised. And with what we've seen, I think that can stick. I don't think he's doing anything, you know, he's not shooting like 60% from the three where you say that's going to come way down. I'm pretty confident, you know, maybe he's not at 24 at the end of the year, but maybe he's at 21. I think that can stick, and that's been a huge pleasant surprise to me. So I'll pick Oladipo on that one.
I think I'll agree with you, because once I saw Sabonis a few times in practice, and this is even back in late September, the start of training camp, I kind of saw this is a guy that's going to be a kind of a double-double guy if he can just get enough minutes. And that was maybe my only thought, was if he comes off the bench. But then I thought, you know, he did start 66 games for the Thunder last year, and while he didn't have as big of a role in that offense, he did start, so he can play more than just being an off the bench kind of guy. And so you know, I see that as well. I've been impressed with Victor. The moves he makes, those aren't flukes. You can't make some of the moves, the, you know, acrobatic flying through the air, double clutch, reverse, step back, knock down a game-winning three against the Spurs. Those are plays that don't happen if you don't have some moxie and some confidence and also some talent. So it is a little bit surprising, but I think it is a little bit sustainable. David K. Jones asked, do you want to see Corey Joe start, Corey Joseph? He says, I know I do. It's another one of these change the starting lineup questions. I guess I maybe cop out a little bit here and say the same thing about a 3-for-2 in the backcourt as I did for the front court. Collison, Oladipo, Joseph, you know, Lance is kind of a tweener in terms of, you know, he's on the floor sometimes. You think of him as a three more than a two. But I think Corey Joseph, it's really a nine-man rotation right now for the Pacers, and at times eight. And so I'm not sure that I would take Darren Collison out of the starting lineup, because I think he serves a role that isn't always seen in the box score, a leadership type of a role. And I think he's someone that can be a calming influence. A little bit inconsistent over the last couple weeks from Darren, and that's, you know, I'm sure that David, as he watches, maybe he wants to see a little more consistency from a scoring perspective from Darren. But I think he's number two in the NBA in assist to turnover ratio, and you got to have a point guard that's not going to turn the ball over. And I would think Pacers fans would respect that, considering what seems like, you know, a significant amount of turnovers we've seen in recent years.
I think if you're going to take a veteran like him out of the starting lineup for a younger player like Corey Joseph, who also is a veteran, to be fair, and he's played on some really good teams and been in the playoffs more than Collison has, I would hesitate to do that unless something has happened from Darren Collison to where his play isn't warranting it anymore. I think Joseph has played really nicely off the bench. I think he's a good player. You know, he's a player that I think would start on a handful of teams in this league as well. And part of that's just because of how good the current crop of point guards in the NBA currently are. I think Corey Joseph is a really good point guard. I think he's somebody, if Collison were to ever unfortunately go down, you'd feel like you're sliding in a player of similar talent into that position. But I think Collison is a veteran. I think he has earned the number one spot. I think he has played well enough for that number one spot. He's high up on the assist ranking. He's not turning the ball over. That's one thing. You look at the Pacers this year, their turnover numbers seemingly are pretty good, and that is started by Darren Collison. So I don't think you take a guy like Collison out unless he has given you reason to take him out. And while Joseph is playing pretty well behind him, Collison has been a little bit inconsistent. I don't think there has been anything warranted there that would lead you to change those two up.
Good questions, and we've touched on many of them. One question says, can Kevin Pritchard save the Colts?
We've had so many of these, I can't keep track of them. But can Kevin Pritchard save the Colts?
I think he's pretty much, it is a full-time job to just worry about an NBA team. a lot of the questions, though, about Domas and Miles, and we've talked a lot about it on the broadcast as well, and you can see it with your eyes when you're watching the broadcast that, or you're watching the game in person. It is interesting to watch, and I think we just watch it moving forward. But I guess that would be my message, and I hope that if you're listening, maybe a little bit of a takeaway is maybe have a little more respect for Thad Young and understand what he does for the team.
Quick final point. We just got a tweet in from our favorite Pacers weekly listener, which is Matt Schroll, who is no longer with the Indiana Pacers anymore. He is in Philadelphia, and he tweeted, "I'm not too late on this, am I?" Essentially, is what he's saying. Why wouldn't you just tweet a question? Like, we're in the middle of taping this right now, Matt. You're too late. If this was a question, we could have answered.
So
your question.
It is a question.
What is a question?
You're too late. Yeah, he's too late.
You're too late because this isn't.
You're too
a question.
Late now. 3 minutes ago, you weren't. Yeah. If you would have just asked a real question.
Yeah, Matt needs to keep up with us a little.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to see Matt in Philadelphia. I found out where he was sitting, but I couldn't get to that spot and see him when the Pacers played the Sixers. So we hope he's enjoying Philly country, and he's sharing some brotherly love up there.
All right, let's move to our pick three, which now that we are 14-ish games in around the NBA, I think you start to see some of the top teams rise as they expected, some of the bottom teams fall as expected, but there are a handful of teams that are underachieving right now, and I think there maybe are more teams underachieving than overachieving. Like, you look at the West, for example. Houston, Golden State, San Antonio, Minnesota are 1-4. I don't think that would surprise many people if that was how it ended on the regular season. But teams that are out, Oklahoma City is out, the Utah is out, the Clippers are out in the East right now. I'm talking out of the top eight. Cleveland isn't in that picture. Charlotte has stumbled a little bit. Miami's out of it right now. That bottom of the East, I think, is what you expect. Brooklyn, Chicago, Atlanta. I think it'll finish in that order in the East. And at the top, you know, Boston's up there, which I think we expected. But our pick three is going to be teams right now that are out of the top eight in their respective conferences that we think are going to make it in or still have that good run in them. Maybe don't panic by the slow start. And
we'll remove the Pacers from the basis of this discussion.
This is an NBA look. We talk enough about the Pacers on this show, so we want to look.
We're not saying because we don't include them, we don't think they'll be in the top eight, but three other teams.
And normally we wait for our combined pick three to the end. Let's just get this out of the way now. I think both of us agree that the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are at 7-7 and just mounted one of the NBA's most entertaining games of the entire season, this comeback they mounted yesterday, a 23-point deficit they erased in the second half in New York. Cleveland is 7-7. They're only a half game out of the playoff picture, so they're not, you know, even that far out of being in the top eight, if you will. But I think there are some problems there. I think, you know, I didn't love the trade from Cleveland from the beginnings of when it happened, just because I thought you were losing Kyrie Irving and not getting a player of his ilk back. And I understand, you know, what having the Brooklyn pick could do for the future, but not having Isaiah Thomas right now, they're struggling. You know, I don't think Kevin Love is the number two player on a really, really good team. So I think struggles, I don't know if you agree with this, I think struggles for what their expectations could be, could still be how their season finishes, but they're going to be in the top eight. Right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I cannot envision a scenario unless LeBron James gets hurt where Cleveland does not finish in the top eight, 7-7. I think it'll be interesting as the season goes along what kind of seed that they're putting themselves in position for. Currently 5 behind Boston, but just a game and a half behind third place Washington. So they'll be in the playoffs. They've struggled, and they're going to lose games that people think they should not lose. But when all is said and done, they will be in. And I'll be interested to see when Isaiah Thomas can come back. Let's look to the Western Conference, and I'll go with a team that was also playing last night, and I was disappointed by the start time, which most of their tip-offs are a little bit late for me, the Clippers tipping off at 10:30, but I did fall asleep and then wake up, and I saw the final 3 minutes of their loss to the Sixers. So I'll say Clippers, 5-8. They'll be in the playoffs because I do see situations with Denver, maybe Memphis, that they could drop out. And I do think the Clippers, even if the current team may not be as constructed as well as they would like, maybe they'll make a move and be a team that can get in. I think the Clippers, they leap past the Lakers, they leap past Utah, and then there are only two teams they need to get by. I think the Clippers get in.
It is interesting doing this exercise in the West because it is deeper. You know, New Orleans is 8-6, Denver is 8-6. There aren't teams that immediately stand out in this top eight, Memphis and Portland, that you say those teams definitely aren't making it. So whereas you look at the Eastern Conference and you might say, okay, I don't envision a team making it, There's nobody in the top eight right now in the West that I'm confident saying will not make the playoffs. I agree with you. I think there are multiple teams that are on the outside looking in that will get in, but their path, I think, is tougher. And the Clippers have been really disappointing to me. I think, in my opinion, they've been the most disappointing team through this early stretch of the season because I actually thought they would be just fine. Losing Chris Paul is obviously difficult, but Patrick Beverley is a strong point guard. He's a great defender. He's a motivator. He's the guy you want to play with, I think. He's extremely tough. And I thought adding Gallinari would help make up for most of, if not all, the scoring you lost from Chris Paul. So I envision like a half step back for the Clippers, and maybe they still will get there. But at 5-8, they're seemingly to me like three steps back at this point in the schedule. And I think I was higher on them than most were before the season. And now I think I'm maybe lower than most were before the season. And I don't like to do that in 13 games because, you know, if they go on a 5-game winning streak, then all of a sudden they're just fine, which they're plenty capable of. But I'm fairly leery of the Clippers right now.
You could argue this is too early to do this exercise, but yeah. I do remember last year people saying a stat where after 20 games, pretty much almost always the top eight in each conference make the playoffs in some order. So we're not that far from that, and when you look at it, as you said, a lot of the teams are about where you would expect them to be from a rankings perspective. I think it's just the records are so close that there is some room for teams to move. So I'm not super confident in the Clippers, but I picked them. But I think I'm going to counter your pick.
Yeah, my pick is Oklahoma City. And so I think they've got to fix this. Like, I don't like how they're playing right now, but I think there's too much talent here. If I'm Oklahoma City, and I'm not pretending to have Billy Donovan levels of intelligence or even one that should be anywhere near an NBA front office or coaching staff, but if I'm Oklahoma City, I know they probably didn't fully max out the Westbrook and Durant when they had them together, but they still had a team that was winning upper 50s in games. And if I'm them, I'm trying to replicate as much of that as possible with Paul instead of Durant. And I know Paul George is not the same player as Kevin Durant. Durant is a better player, no doubt. But Paul still is, you know, a borderline elite player in this league. And if I'm them, that worked to at least get us to a top team in the conference. And, you know, they had the year a couple of years ago where they threatened winning a championship. I'm making those one and two pretty clear cut, one Westbrook, two, and then I'm making Anthony like a pretty far away three, and I want him to be that guy. Like, I would love to see, this isn't totally his game, but I'd love to see him kind of play a little bit like Korver in that he just kind of hunts around the perimeter, because Anthony is a really good shooter. He is a really good scorer, but their issue right now, this team is built to run, and we know that's not Paul's biggest strength, and it's definitely not Carmelo's biggest strength, and if I'm them, I would go back to what worked. Make Paul George try to play as much of the Kevin Durant role as you can, and then have Carmelo Anthony be a distant third who knocks down threes, because George and because Westbrook are garnering so much of the defensive attention that he can find space around the perimeter. But I still think there's just too much talent there for them not to be good, and I think Oklahoma City, when all said and done, I picked them to be in the top four, and I'm not going to let a 6-7 start change my opinion.
So I'll just take an opposite approach to your Oklahoma City, and I'm not sure that there are very many people that would say right now, especially at the beginning of the season, and definitely even right now, even though they're outside the top eight, that they won't make the playoffs. I'm just going to say no playoffs for the Thunder, and here's a little bit of where I'm coming from on this. Think back to last year. The Pacers were a team. 1-1, 1-2, lost 1, lost 2. Just up and down. And I felt like every time the Pacers won a couple of games, and I'm, you know, not specifically saying just Paul, but as the leader of the team and the star of the team and then also team spokesman most of the time, it felt like, okay, they got it figured out. And then they would just let up. And last week, it was, oh, what's wrong with the Thunder? I mean, every podcast you download, that's at least the second or the third topic nationally. Well, then all of a sudden, I just checked today some of the updated podcasts, and it's like the Thunder are rolling. Well, they rolled against the Mavericks, okay? They've won two. I don't think they've got everything figured out. They're going to win a lot of games at home. I think they have one of the best home court atmospheres in the NBA. They have a real home court advantage, and I think that Carmelo and Paul are – Paul can play pretty well on the road. Carmelo may be a guy that can really thrive on having that, you know, crowd behind you. I just think that throughout this season, there are so many things they have to work through that they risk being about a 500 team in late December or January, and then the doubts kind of creep in about, okay, can we be as good as we thought we could be? Can we be as good as everyone else thought we could be? The longer they stay around 500 without going on a win 5 out of 6 or win 7 out of 8 stretch, the more cause for concern. And then in turn, it is, okay, well, if you can't in 40 games, let's say it's the halfway point of the season, if you can't put a win streak together and create some separation with this much talent in the first 41 games, can you do it? Can you do it in the playoffs? And if you have doubt, then do you decide to trade Paul? Because if it's not working in half a season, then, you know, despite Paul maybe most 90% of the time, I'm thinking he'll probably say all the right things when he's asked about his future, but there's going to be that random time that he goes to L.A. and the reporter says, oh, man, you love it here, don't you? And he's going to say, yeah, I love L.A. And then it's going to be the headline, and then it's going to become a big story.
Did you see his fishing comment the other day?
No.
He was asked about...
Did he miss Indiana?
Well, no, he was asked if he's gotten a chance to go fishing, and he said he hasn't really because moving took so long, but hopefully he would find a summer in Oklahoma to get a chance to do some fishing.
Okay, Paul. That actually requires quite a bit of forward thinking to come up with that.
Yeah.
Unexpected comment from Paul. But I just think that there is a chance that this doesn't work. And, you know, those are guys that actually read the headline. Maybe not Russell, but I think Paul is aware of what people say. Yeah. And the more he hears that there's trouble in paradise and that this team is not equipped to compete with the best of the best, it's more doubt in his mind about his future and his present. And I'm going to say no playoffs for the Thunder.
I will preface it by saying I'm still going to say that they're having a home first round playoff series. I'll go with the
four. So you'll go top four.
I picked them before, so I'm not going to let 13 games change it yet. But what your point is good, and especially the fact that they're not going to be given anything here in this West. Like we said, right now 6 is Denver, 7 in Memphis, is 8 in Portland. Like, those are really solid teams. And sitting behind them are the Clippers. So they're going to have to do this on their own. They're not going to be given anything by teams falling out. You know, maybe New Orleans. New Orleans is the one team in there that I think everyone is still a little bit undecided on. But Denver, Memphis, and Portland, I expect to be really solid teams. There's a lot of talent on those teams. Those aren't championship-level teams. But there's talent there. There's experience there. Millsap and Jokic in Denver. You know, the backcourt in Portland. And Memphis seemingly is in this position every single year. So they're going to have to do it on their own. They're going to have to jump teams. They're going to have to play better than good teams to get to those positions. But, yeah, I think to me, and obviously we have a little bit of more interest in this knowing Paul and following his career, I think they're the most interesting team in the NBA going forward. You want to close this out looking quickly. Memphis, okay, I would guess. I do the road games from the studio in downtown. You go to the road as part of your job. You're there, and you will be in Memphis on Wednesday. It's where you guys will be heading here in about an hour. I would guess Memphis is pretty low on your favorite road trips this year. Nothing maybe to do with Memphis, but these have been some tough games that the Pacers have played when they've gone to Memphis. And I think I still think back to that final game of the year in 2014-2015 where a win gets them in the playoffs. Paul George has just come back. He's being carried off the floor. They had a good start to that game, but it closed out weak. And Memphis has been a tough place to play, to say the least, for Indiana.
In an 82-game regular season, there are going to be games, and now this will be fifth year traveling, fourth year in this position, that I don't remember much about. And that's one I remember everything about. I remember the pregame meal. I remember the first quarter, you know, update on the broadcast. I remember checking my phone for the scores of the other teams and the games that would impact the team. And then I remember Paul being, you know, carried off the floor. And then that feeling when you got home and you knew the season was over and everybody kind of walked to their cars after the flight had landed in Indianapolis. So that, and then a little bit of a carryover. I remember last year, I'm going to go back and look up the numbers, but they could not miss outside the three-point arc. It was just an unbelievable performance from a team that we're not used to seeing knock down so many outside shots. You think of more of a defensive team. So it's been a tough place to play. I don't think this year's Grizzlies, they're the team that I think maybe of the top eight, maybe the Pelicans as well, that could drop out of the mix. So I'm still a little down on Memphis, but I guess you were watching last night the Bucks and Grizzlies. I guess I was kind of hoping that the Memphis would win that game so they maybe would have less of an intensity Wednesday night, because they understand they can't fall too far in the Western Conference. So it's a tough place to play. The arena's not always super packed, and it's not an incredible environment, but it's been tough for the Pacers, and it's a tough week when you think, okay, well, you got a home game against Detroit. Well, they're all of a sudden first or second in the Eastern Conference. And then you go to Miami, Orlando. Well, neither one is impossible, but neither one is there are going to be no gimme games. Mm-hmm. But it's a tough couple of weeks coming up, and anytime you can get one, you got to take advantage. Here's what I would say. Before that Cleveland game, I looked at that three-game road trip, and I went, ugh. And then you beat Cleveland, and you're so impressive, and then you think, oh, this team can beat the Sixers and Knicks. And then you lose that game, and then you don't know about it. And then, you know, after you lose to Detroit and New Orleans, you're like, I don't know if this team's going to win again. And then you see them play against the Bulls. So I would say there's a lot of up and down. I think that the Pacers have a chance to be a little more rested. You consider you had a couple of days off before this Grizzlies game. That seems to have worked for this team in the past, the way they play as well. If no one else gets added to the injury report, you're about as healthy as you could say you've ever been this season. It's a winnable game, but you can't have another. They've lost, what, 5 out of 6? Mm-hmm. So you can't have – you got to kind of stop this and win 3 out of 4 here pretty soon.
Yeah, I agree. And Memphis, I don't know, maybe the Pacers are advantaged by Zach Randolph not being there anymore, because it did seem, too, like, you know, they beat Indiana down in the post, and maybe the Pacers are a little better planned to deal with this. As you touched on, Detroit comes here on Friday. That is a Hickory night, and it's the first Hickory night of the year, and it's the first Hickory night in the white jerseys, and we've gotten a chance to see these close up. They're really sharp. I think we're expecting a pretty good crowd for that one, so if you haven't gotten your tickets, I would suggest asking or acting now on that one. But the Hickory Knights, I know we're in year 3 of this, so they're not necessarily new anymore, but there's something I always look forward to about the Hickory Knights, and I think that's added by these new jerseys. And people don't realize they actually wear, I think they wear the white in the movie more than they wear the red, but it's just in that final game they're in the red. But the white is actually pretty iconic and synonymous with the team, and they look pretty sharp in them. And with the new Nike jerseys, which are a little sleeker and tighter fitting, I'm pretty big fan of how this looks going to be on Friday.
I think it will look sharp. I do like the jerseys. And I also, as someone like you growing up in this state, I always look forward to paying tribute to whoever is honored. And Friday night, they are honoring the city of Newcastle and the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. And I can remember in high school, as a freshman, we had something set up where our freshman team on a Saturday got to go play against Newcastle on a Saturday morning, and then went to the Hall of Fame. And that was such a big deal to play in Chrysler Fieldhouse, the world's largest high school fieldhouse. And so I'm good friends with Chris May, the executive director of the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. In fact, just talked to him on the phone on the way here to Bankers Life Fieldhouse. So it'll be a good way to honor the city of Newcastle and how cool it is. I actually interned at the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame when I was in college. So a lot of ties to that, and I was happy to see that as someone in a group of people that we're going to honor. And I also, I tried to ask Max Leinwand if my segment that I do on Pacers pregame, actually on the game coverage prior to tip-off, behind the curtain a little bit, you know, we always tape that segment on the road, and at home we usually do it live from the Fox Loft because the anthem is going on and you can't be in the arena talking, and you don't show, you know, just TV kind of what you do. You don't show the national anthem at every NBA basketball game. Certain times maybe you do, but I'm usually in the Fox Loft with Eddie Gill breaking down one final aspect of the game for the home games, and I never get to see the intros, and I sometimes don't even get to my seat until the ball's thrown up. But I really love what they do here with the Hickory Knights in the in-arena presentation, and they mix in the comments from the movie and the song. And, I mean, obviously I get goosebumps actually just talking about it because I love it. So I got to remind myself to tell Max, hey, let's tape that, or let's not have me in segment 2 so I can go down and watch this year's version of the intro for the first Hickory game.
He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. Pacers against the Memphis Grizzlies. Jeremiah heading out to Memphis here in the next hour with the team. That's on Wednesday night. And then Pacers versus Pistons on Friday night, 7 o'clock. You can catch our coverage. He on TV, myself on radio, 30 minutes before each game. Or you can be there on Friday night by visiting Pacers.com/tickets. We'll talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.